Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
To hell and back is in the job description. Being roughed up, scuffed up, run over, kicked, thrown, dropped, dunked, and done the unthinkable is a duty we've embraced for more than 40 years. Through superior engineering and constant innovation, only Pelican has conquered the chaos a life of ambition can dish out. And we've done it to empower you.
Yak Gadget, made in America, based outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Yak Gadget offers all kinds of storage accessories, quick mount motor mounts, anchor systems, track mounted accessories, even paddles. Go to yakgadget.com and get your kayak decked out for your next trip out on the water.
The 153 Bait Company, based in Troy, Ohio, make everything from plastics to custom painted hard baits. Hook them hard and hook them off. All of our baits are made to order and all of our hard baits are hand painted to order. So go to the153anglers.com to place your order today.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. I'm Dustin, your host. Tonight, we have Justin Ritchie from Salt Strong. He just recently had some good results over at the Extreme Kayak Fishing Tournament, an offshore event there in Southern Florida. So we're going to bring him on, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the Salt Strong family and what they got going on. There he is. What's going on tonight, brother? What's up, buddy? Oh man, just trying to end the evening after a long day at work, man. That's tough. You know, come home and kick back, but you know, got to get on the show. Got to get up here and try to get a little segment done. You know, get you on here.
Yeah, man.
Talk a little bit about what's been going on. You know.
I'm excited to be here, man. Thank you for reaching out to me. I love doing podcasts, filling everybody in. There's a lot to talk about.
Oh wow, for sure. We could probably spend half the show talking about one of your Salt Strong co-workers, Wyatt.
Wyatt, you listening?
No, what's up, man? Listen, I'm sure Wyatt.
No bar.
I'll be listening along, man. Need to get on the water with him soon. Well, cool deal, man. Well, you know, got Justin Ivey on tonight. Everybody, you know, we're going to let him introduce himself and give a little backstory, talk about his fishing bug, where it started, and what led him into that plastic boat.
Cool. So what's going on, everybody? Don't mind my crazy hair. It's been a long day, just like Dustin said, for both of us. My name is Justin. I was born and raised here in Orlando, Florida. Just like any good old Florida boy, you know, grew up fishing all the bass ponds here around Orlando, Orlando, Central Florida, and quickly fell back in love with fishing in my teenage years in high school, pond hopping. Went to University of Florida up in Gainesville, and I had a Corolla at the time, and I always wanted a chance to get on the water. I've never owned a boat in my life, like a real boat, and I just wanted opportunities to get on the water, but, you know, as a broke college kid, I didn't have many opportunities, but I did have a chance to rent a tandem sit inside kayak from the outdoor rec center at UF, and Cedar Key is only about an hour drive. So what I would do is I would get, you know, towels and pads, and I'd talk to friends in my psych class, my math class, science class, and say, look, I need another person to paddle this puppy because it's not easy paddling a two-person sit inside tandem.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I said, I will provide all the gear, all of my knowledge. I will pay for gas. Who's calling me?
Yeah, boom, boom. Phone on silent. Dustin, you're supposed to be a pro by now.
What a newbie. What a newbie.
I know, right?
So I would incentivize people and say, look, if you want to go out and go fish, I will put us on fish, but I just need you to come with me and, you know, pull your weight, literally. Like, come out and join me and paddle. And they would pay for the rental fee. It was like $45 for a whole weekend. It was really cheap.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I did that all through college, graduated, and I moved back to Orlando. My background is in, as funny as it sounds, in fine arts. I have a bachelor's of fine arts in acting and a degree in fisheries and aquatic science, so fisheries management. Cool. So kind of like acting and science fish stuff. I was going to make it work. I had an idea.
Like I'm catching a fish. Oh, there he is. Like,
well, you ain't seen no pants. So I got home and I was like, you know, my parents were kind enough to help me with a small graduation gift. And they said, what would you like to do? And some of my friends like went on trips and some friends got cars and did crazy stuff. And I was like, here's all I want. I've got half the money for like a cheapy $400 or $500 kayak that I saved up a little bit while working through college. I said, help me buy a cheap kayak from Dick's Sporting Goods and maybe help me pay for my gas for like 2-3 months. And don't make me get a job. And they're like, no, you need to get a job, honey. And I'm like, no. All I've done is school and work. I went to college. I want to decompress and have like 2-3 months of doing nothing but fish in Mosquito Lagoon. And I did. I did that for like 3 or 4 months. Fishing in the lagoon like 3 to 4 days a week, driving over with the Corolla and the kayak, like a little 12-foot sit on top kayak. And I remember my first time fishing Mosquito Lagoon. I had never seen a tail in redfish before. This was college. Like I've caught redfish and trout and stuff over in Cedar Key, but fishing the lagoon when there was seagrass and the water was crystal clear is magical. And I got 12 redfish that day. They were all upper slot, over slot, all sight fished, tailing fish, crystal clear water. I mean, I was cane pulling some fish. It was one of the best fishing trips of my life. I remember it vividly the first time I went out there. And it just, I mean, it exploded from there. I realized how close I could get to redfish from a kayak. I realized how much money I was saving, not needing to have a boat and tow everything over, deal with all the electronics and the repairs and things. And I just kept things really, really simple. Milk crate, 2 rods and rod holders, a paddle and a life vest and whistle. And I would just go and I'd be gone all day and I'd get lobster red sunburnt. And I mean, nothing else compared to the feeling of not just catching fish, but being out there. And it's like the sounds, the smells, the feeling of like the sun on you. I mean, it's special. And I kept with it. You know, I upgraded my kayak a couple times. I, you know, met some friends in the Orlando Kayak Fishing Forum and, you know, started doing a couple tournaments here and there with my friend Nick Dyeroff. I think he's retired. I don't know if Nick Dyeroff fishes anymore, but he did it a while back. And I think by about 2014, I got my first Hobie. I saved up, used my tax return and some funds, and I bought a Hobie Outback from Kayaks by Bo in Titusville. And I was in the best shape of my life. I was just in a good spot in my life. I was like 24, 25, and fished my first IFA tournament, got disqualified. That's a whole other story, but it's follow the rules. Anybody out there doing a tournament, follow your rules to
do a T.
It's not even a joke.
A joke.
I would have gotten like fourth place, I think, if I didn't get DQ'd. So I was pretty bummed about that. But my next tournament, I won. And that was my first tournament that I've actually like won and got a good place in. Was really excited. I was competing against some of the OG guys, Dustin, like Pepe Vidal, Alan Riley, Redfish Chuck, Alex Gorinsky. I mean, D. Kaminsky, all those diehard sight fishing people in Brevard County, fishing Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River. And I took first. I was really, really happy about it. The week after was a boat tournament. Kayaks could compete in it. That was a cash payout. I took first in that. And I started thinking like, man, I don't know if this is luck. I don't know if it's preparation, if it's kind of a combination of the two. but I was in the best shape of my life. I was in the best mental state of my life. And I was just so determined to be at 110%, the best of my abilities at that time. And a month or two later, I competed in an IFA tournament up in Jacksonville in 2014. And I won that one. And I didn't realize when I got up on the podium and I was talking to the tournament director at the time, and he said, "Are you ready to go to Amsterdam?" And I said, why would I go to Amsterdam? And everybody's giggling. Rory Gregg, all the guys up in the Jacksonville.
Oh, I was about to say Rory Gregg. He's from Jacksonville there.
Yep. Yeah. Mm. Rory was there. A lot of people. And I was like, why would I go to Amsterdam? And they said, "Son, you just won the regional qualifier for the Hobie World Championship. You get to go to Amsterdam." And I was like, "Oh my God!" So
for real,
like, why? This is nuts. Like, I've never traveled outside of the country in my life. So went to Amsterdam, did the Hobie Worlds, met 50 of some of the most intense kayak fishermen from Australia, from China, all over England, Europe. Even locals that, like, I thought were just going to sweep the floor with all of us. I took fourth out of 50 in that tournament.
Fishing for some species you've never even targeted. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like pike and perch and some other silver zanders or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Those fish.
I couldn't believe it. And after that, I still did tournaments here and there. I'd take second and third in other IFAs. And that all kind of settled out. Let's fast forward a couple years. Life happened. I met my now wife, settled down, got married, bought a house, got a dog, still loved fishing, still was fishing all the time. Wasn't doing the tournament scene as much. It just kind of, everybody goes through it. You go through a transition in life. And I did my first offshore kayak tournament. I was kind of nervous to do it because, as you know, Dustin, when you go offshore, your electronics, your rigs, your safety requirements, it's a lot more intense and it's a lot more detailed. And I had just done it recreationally for fun, caught blackfin tuna. And I just did the tournament in 2019, the extreme kayak fishing tournament down in Southeast Florida 2 years ago. And I just wanted to go catch tuna. Like, I know it's a weight tournament. I know you need kings and mahi and a combined weight bag to win. I just wanted to go get a big tuna. That's all I cared about.
You went and crushed a big tuna too.
I got a 22 pound tuna. I got my two small kings and I took first. Yep. First time ever fishing in offshore, the extreme kayak tournament. And I was like, you know, if any tournament that you've won or done well in and you do well, and everyone's like, "Good job, man, good job." And you have that feeling of like, thank you. But it doesn't set in. It doesn't hit you. And you know, you're not. And you're like, "Yeah, man, there's times where I know I did well," and you're happy with yourself and happy with what happened. But the magnitude of what happens doesn't set in for days, a week or more. And then you realize like, wow, I busted my butt and it paid off and it feels good. And, you know, all that came to kind of a head. I was a rep in the industry for about 2 years. I was the rep for Star Rods, Owner Hooks, the Bubble Box, Keep Your Bait Alive, Marine Metal Products, and a bunch of other brands. And I love doing that. But at the end of 2020, I Joe from Salt Strong reached out to me. He was actually a customer of mine. I would work with them on getting them owner hooks and all the twist locks and stuff. And Joe reached out to me and we talked, and I knew they were looking to, you know, add somebody onto their team as a head of tackle. So kind of like a buying role to buy all kinds of product for all of our members, rods, reels, lures, everything. And it's right up my alley. It was a good move. This is the best job I've ever had in my life. I'm very humbled to be with Joe and the guys at Salt Strong. Not just because I get to work from home. I get to talk to a lot of, you know, fishermen that I think the biggest thing, Dustin, that brings me joy wasn't the fact that all the perks and benefits that come with working for Salt Strong. It's being able to teach people how to hone their craft. Like, if you're really good at something, there's something incredibly gratifying about teaching others. Cause I mean, we could be great fishermen and live our whole lives and never share that experience. And what good does that do? It brings me joy to know that I can share my experiences, my skill set, and help others catch their first big redfish or their first kingfish or first snook. That's gratifying on a whole different level. It's very fulfilling. So I love being a part of the community and I love the camaraderie of the team. Yep. Wyatt, you're a big part of that, man. If you listen in, it fills my heart with a lot of joy. So it kind of brings me to where I am today. I'm nestled in, head of tackle assault strong.
Head of tackle assault strong.
Yep. Doing tournaments, I guess, as cameos.
Yeah, your first extreme kayak fishing tournament, and you took first place. And then this most recent one a few weeks back, you had a second.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
I did.
Sure did.
So the Extreme Kayak Tournament had its ups and downs in 2020 because of COVID. Yep. One of the tournaments was canceled. The next one was just big. We all had to distance ourselves and the craziness. I didn't do super well in that one last year, but this one that happened about 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, went down, knew that I really wanted to do the tournament just because I like supporting Joe Hector. He's a good guy. It's a family operation and it's a big payout. I mean, first place is $5,000 for a kayak tournament, which is nuts. I mean, where kayak fishing has come 15 years ago to now, like even with the Hobie tournaments and whatnot.
It's insane.
It's so big. I was a little apprehensive to do this tournament because it was going to be like 2 to 3 foot seas, 15, 20 mile an hour winds out of the southeast. And we're just getting hammered with wind.
Hammered.
Like 4 or 5 second interval. It was not fun. It was sloppy. And usually this extreme tournament is a 2-part series. You got one in June and then one in August. Yeah. He just combined it all into one, included all like the bonus cash prizes and the actual prizes into one big tournament. And just said, all right, everybody, we're just going to send it. And I went out pre-fished the day before. I think I was the only kayak. No, Franco Natividad. Forgive me if I butcher your last name. Franco was out there. He was way south of me. But it was one of the only kayakers pre-fishing the day before because all the locals were like, I ain't fishing in that crap. Like, that's not fun. But I don't know. I want to push myself. It's not about you know, going on, getting on a bunch of fish, real different doing it offshore because these fish are always moving around. They could be in 180 feet one day and then 100 feet the next day, and the conditions could be exactly the same. But I just wanted to see if the tournament was going to be worth it and if I could handle that slop. Bite was really good. Got 2 kingfish and like a 18-pound tuna. I was off the water by 11 the day before. I was like, man, cool. I got 40-something pounds. That's pretty good.
Solid. Yeah.
I feel pretty good. So – did the tournament morning of, bought extra bait. For those of you that have not done this tournament, the Extreme Kayak Fishing Tournament is, you know, it's exactly what it is. It's extreme. As long as it is safe enough,
you're going out.
You're going to go out. You're going to do it. You're probably going to get a lot of water in the kayak. You're going to need to debail water out of the kayak. I bought extra bait. And goggle eyes that you reserve the day of the tournament's not cheap, but I've got 10 goggle eyes because I was like, man, if there's cudas and bonitas and things to weed out, I want
to lose the weight, have extra bait to get the right fish.
Yeah. You got to have
the and that's what is cool about this tournament. Y'all there's the bait butler is what I would call the bait bro. There's a boat out there. You like pull up and get your bait from. Like butler.
It's a serious operation, man. And like those guys have been going out and catching bait for weeks, penning them up, feeding them. Like it's a planned thing. There's a lot of moving parts to get the shuttling that bait out there. But got out. Long story short of the tournament, got one king early, like a 17, 18 pound king. Cool. Spent the rest of the day jigging, you know, doing what you call a poor man's downrigger. So you get like a little rubber band. And a teardrop sinker, and you like loop it on your line and you got 20 feet a leader. So you got a rubber band kind of holding your bait down a little bit while you're trolling around. Yeah. I went the rest of the day and I didn't have a whole lot of luck. I got one or two king cutoffs, hooked something big that almost fooled me. And it was like 12:30. And I was like, hey man, I gave it my best shot. The weather was rough. I had my shots. I didn't hook any. I got one king and like a little mahi that didn't count. It was like, needed to be 5 pounds. Right. It was 4.98.
God.
Like, whatever. I said, let me dip it in the water real quick. Yeah. Like, come here, add a little bit of weight. I made my way back in 100 feet, 90 feet, 80 feet, 60, 70, 60 feet. And there's a reef line down there in about 55, 60 feet of water that runs north. The day
is that
before,
like the Coquina Rock, kind of the rock that runs along the coast down there.
Yep. It's the Coquina Rock line. I mean, there's the Brevard Reef that comes out further than 75 feet, but it's all probably part of the same system.
Yeah.
And the day before, Joe Hector and I were talking. He's got a little black book, and he calls it his almanac. And he's like, "Listen, man, the locals know that in the summer months, around full and new moons, we have walls of wahoo that move into our local waters." He's like, "We've had tournaments where guys have caught 70-pound wahoo during the tournament. It's been nuts." And he said, "Here's the thing that people don't tell you is those wahoo, they come into 60 feet and they come into that reef line and they just eat whatever they want to eat." Mm-hmm. I was like, "Wow, I didn't think about 50, 60-pound wahoo and 60 feet of water." He's like, "Yeah,
that's insane."
That's why you'll see a couple boats bumping around that shallow. They're not going for kings. They're going for big wahoo. Made my way into the 60-foot reef. I had one bait left on a down rig. Got hammered. Stripped so much line, it spooked all the ballyhoo on the surface. There were ballyhoo showering everywhere. Freaked out. I was like, "This is it. I got a wahoo." And I'm sitting, I'm like saying out loud, "Please, God, please. I know I haven't done that much lately, but please, if you could just help me." And, finally got it up. I can't believe I landed that fish. Ended up being another 18-pound kingfish. Got a bad belly gaff. Got it in the kayak. It tangled up in my Mirage Drive on my other setup. It was a mess, but I wouldn't have had it any other way.
Right.
Got it in. Got back on land. I'm thinking like, man, this is pretty good. These are tough conditions. Get back on land. My friend Sean Rolls, local down there. I looked at him and was, "Hey, man, how'd you do?" I look inside his fish bag. And he's got two big tails sticking out of the bag. I'm like, "All right, so I didn't get first." I knew right off the bat. I'm like, "All right, maybe everybody did a little bit better." I think about halfway through, I realized Sean owned it. Got like 60 or 70 pounds. Got two almost 30-pound kings and like a 16, 17-pound tuna. I mean, like
in those awful conditions. Yeah, I just recorded with Sean the other day.
You did?
Also, yeah, so there'll be an episode coming out with Sean also.
Sean, you're my boy, man. Like, you talk about he's very, very humble. He's dedicated.
And
he's like really, really nice guy. I would crash at his place a couple times and come down for prior tournaments, for Sailfish Smackdown events. So it was very like shake and bake for him to get first and me to get second. We're both really, really
That's
happy
awesome. About it. Yeah. Get to share that with him too. So being that you are in Orlando, you're not that far away from the coast, actually. Beeline Highway, you put you right there in Space Coast pretty quick. I know there's some other stuff around there from surfing down that way. I grew up in Southeast Georgia, so I was very familiar with, Indy Atlantic, Melbourne, Sebastian Inlet and all that, Vero Beach and all that, surfing all the way down to West Palm at times when the conditions were right. Being that you're there in Central Florida, how often do you say you would get to target offshore species and get ready for a tournament like this? You said you just pre-fished the one day before. That was it?
That's all. Yeah, a lot of times that's all I can do, man. And that's – I don't know. I'm okay with one day for an offshore tournament. Man, if I was doing an inshore tournament, I need like three.
Yeah.
Because you got to really find these fish that are holed up. But I still fish near shore in Brevard County coming into this time of the year, from now until about the end of August, early September, until the storms really kick up and you just can't make it out.
Yeah.
We get calm west wind days. The water clears up. A lot of the threadfin and pogies show up, and you can get You can get big kings, 25 feet of water, half a mile off the beach, all the tarpon roll in. Yep. I'm using about the same gear. So I can kind of practice a little bit in nearshore waters locally, but mm-hmm. it's a 3.5 hour drive if I want to go down and fish pompano, sailfish. So it is it's a commitment. I only know one or two other guys coming from Central Florida running down
right. there. Yeah, I'd be running over there and chasing those buoy bass down there. Oh, it's the old triple tail down there. That's a pretty good region. I know a surfing buddy of mine who, you know, social media friend, I'll say, Scott Lum was, he's an awesome captain down there on the Space Coast down there.
He's got
him. Some solid work, man, on the triple tail. You know, and that's a great
He's got him tagged. They got to be,
I think he's got him figured out pretty good. You know, every time I get over there, man, I need to get over there and fish with you. And I've sent him, you know, send him tackle here and there. Hey, try these, you know, some stuff from over here that he might not find over there, you know.
Yeah,
like our custom cookies and all that kind of stuff and different kind of plastics that he might not see over there. I've sent him a couple things here and there.
Triple tail will they'll break your heart around the buoy line if you hook a big one. So I try to come prepared.
Yeah, those are some awesome table fare and awesome fighting fish. You know, they're super strong. They're nothing but solid muscle and three tails. That's why they call them triple tail. They got all that power on that back end. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, man.
So, well, cool deal, man. We'll talk about Salt Strong a little bit. You know, you kind of led on a little bit at the beginning, and but you know, what else going on with that? Give us some insight on resources and stuff that are available for you know, to helping all the anglers that are part of that program. Free, is it subscription based, or what's the deal with it? You know, give everybody a little scoop.
The whole focus of Salt Strong is to help. It's anglers helping anglers. Joe and Luke, and Luke has a pretty strong tournament background himself. They felt that, you know, there's opportunities for people to learn how to be better at golf. There's opportunities to, you know, hone your, you know, in bodybuilding, to go to the gym and have a trainer. There really isn't an opportunity to have a platform to teach people how to be better at inshore fishing. And they found this niche and this opportunity to educate people to better their craft and all the while form this community of anglers, this insider membership. I think we're at 25,000 people right now.
Yeah.
It's massive. And it's not just about education. And there is an opportunity for insider members to earn discounts on tackle. That's cool. I think the biggest thing is community. So we have an inside community platform where it's kind of like a private Facebook, but you don't have all of the ads and all of the, you know, the tagging and the marketing and all the, you know, crud that's out there on Facebook and Instagram right now. It's a platform for everybody to kind of like an original forum, you know, how the forums used to be where someone's like, hey, I'm fishing around here. Anybody want to join me?
Yeah, meet up.
Hey, here's a report of my catch. And every single comment from people is, that's awesome. So happy you went out and did that. What were you using? I was using this. What time of day? Everybody's sharing information. Everybody's helping everybody get better. It's kind of like a Neverland. Like, it's really, it makes me really happy to jump on in the community and see everybody so hyped about sharing their experiences and helping other anglers be better. That just, it feeds into what Salt Strong is. And that's, you know, we stand behind the statement that we're the best fishing club in America, and we guarantee people will save time and money on the water, and they'll start catching more fish in less time or their money back. So there's opportunities to join the insider membership. You can subscribe and watch us on YouTube. We have a lot of great content we share publicly on YouTube as well. Anything and everything that has to do with inshore fishing, beach fishing, pier fishing, kayaks, first-time boat owners, and we're, you know, going into surf fishing near shore. Me and Wyatt are talking about the near shore stuff too. It's fun. It keeps us on our toes, and we hear a lot of feedback from our members and the public on what they want to learn about. Hey, I'm coming down on vacation. I've never fished this area. What do I need to look for? What is the 90-10 rule? 90% of the fish in 10% of the water. We teach all these things. Yeah, for sure. It works. It works everywhere under any body of water. Otherwise, why would we spend 3 days pre-fishing for a tournament if we needed to find that 10% of the water that had 90% of the fish? And it's cool. We even have proprietary lures. So if y'all out there ever heard of the Slam Shady? The
Slam Shady.
What's Shady, up? Baby.
There it is right there in your face.
I got this guy's on a I think it's a 3/16 ounce Texas Eye.
Eye Strike Fishing. Yes, sir.
Lots of different lures. We got Slam Shady in Z-Man. We got Slam Shady 2.0. We got the Bomber, which is like that 5-inch with the big tail covering a lot of water. Mm-hmm. We got the Power Prawn, which are our proprietary like super durable shrimp. These things look really real, and they've got a cavity for a rattle. They've got slits for weedless applications, jig heads. I've been using a bunch of their stuff. Alabama Leprechaun. We have so many things coming out this year. It's a couple of new colors that are, I think, getting debuted today or tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, Wyatt's been putting a hurting on some fish with that Power Prawn down here in Texas for sure.
I've used a lot of shrimp lures, man. I've used Savage Gear, Live Target, Marker 54.
Marker 54 has them. Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of good shrimp lures. They all have their time and place, but overall, I've really liked this. I think that Luke has just designed it specifically for grass flats, docks, or local waters here throughout Florida. And everywhere I go, I find new ways to rig it. I'm like, that's pretty cool, man. It's pretty, pretty versatile lure. But that's basically it. We welcome everybody to come. Google, go to www.saltstrong.com. Check us out. Read the story about Luke and Joe. Who are these brothers? Why did they start this company? What are we all about? What's our big mission? You know, have a million members to create a theme park, if you will, of people to come and guides to operate out of, and a restaurant and a lagoon with fish to feed and charter operations and a big tackle store. Like, these guys have huge dreams of creating something that's all about community and all about helping anglers be better. And having started as a pond hopping kid in Orlando to, you know, just roughing it, kayaking, whatever, to have the opportunity to be with these guys is a blessing.
Pretty cool.
Like, I wake up every morning loving the fact that I can help people be better at fishing.
Yeah, awesome. For sure. I feel you on that too. Growing up in Southeast Georgia, farm pond, chasing bass, and then the inshore fishery there, fishing out of like a 15-foot Chris Craft with a 70 horse Johnson or something, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, hiding underneath the deck when it got rough and, you know, figuring out the tide swings over there. And then from where now, starting out in that, you know, open up boundaries with that kayak, even if it was a little perception. And I car topped on the top of a Corolla myself.
We know about the perceptions, man. Yeah,
perception, Pescador 12.5. That's what I had. The Caster 12.5. Yep, Caster 12.5. Same thing, man. The yellow one. It was called the Bruised Banana. It had black. I painted black fade on the stern and the rear of aft of the kayak, and it was like, all my friends said, "You got that Bruised Banana on top of that car," and I had some little Thule racks on the top and freaking car topped on that Corolla, baby. That's what I was talking about right there. That's where it started. That's where the roots. That's where the whole addiction started right there. So I can relate. You know, coming through the ranks and with Jackson and just being blessed to be associated with some great companies and stuff myself. So, you know, kudos for that, man. Because, you know, hard work does pay off. You get, you know, you got recognized for a reason. So, you know, like you said, the camaraderie and the fellowship in fishing, not only in kayak fishing, just fishing in general, is what really draws a lot of people there. You know, there's bad seeds in everything, like all sports and aspects of life at times. There's some bad seeds here and there, but the majority of what I've experienced, you know, in these tournaments and these get-togethers or boondoggles, what they like to call them. Just something. I'm so ready for some of those to come back this year. I'm hoping we really get to have a few get-togethers like that. I know I'm going to plug right now the Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club in Louisiana has their Fall and Tide tournament coming up in October. It's the Hobie Worlds qualifier also. They capped the entry limit at 200. I went ahead and got my entry in, even though I have conflicts that weekend, and I'm like, dude, I got to make it work and get over there. Those guys in that club, that's one of the oldest operating kayak fishing clubs in the country.
I've never fished Louisiana. That's on the bucket list.
That should be a really rad event, man.
It's not closed out yet, is it?
Not yet. It's pretty damn close.
Okay. I got to take a look at it when we get off the call.
Yeah, it's on Tourney X. I'll send you the link, actually. They got a good deal going on. Right now, there is 110 anglers signed up, and a registration just opened this morning at 7.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that goes up pretty quick.
So there's some hammers already. Matt Van, I saw on there. Steve Lessard. I know he's been around the IFA a few times. Steve, if you hadn't heard of that name before, he signed up.
Yeah, man. Steve, like, he's just touched by God, man. He's lucky. Yeah, that's right.
A couple Jackson guys, Chuck Behan. Yeah, Ingaleski, he's part of the Bayou Coast. Sean Rastanis, I've had him on the podcast before. I'm sure I'll have him on again before that event to give everybody more details on that. If not, you can go to check out the page, Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club on Facebook, and get info on that. It's called Falling Tide. Yeah, back to Mr. Justin right here. You know, I get sidetracked sometimes. You know, I got that little stuff goes off to the side here and there, but
I'm not a good person to talk to when it comes to that, because I'm a feed into it.
That's what a podcast is, right? Yeah. I mean, you're not supposed to. I mean, I got an outline, right here. I kind of have a little bit of some questions I come up with, and I'll give that away. The guest, I usually send a little outline or timeline of questions, and you know what makes it flow a little better. But
I admire the organization. You know, man.
Like my wife says, though, you could talk the damn paint off of a wall, you know. So, yeah, that means just running my dang mouth and take care of it. We kind of touched on some of this stuff earlier, you know, live bait. You were talking about the bait caddies and the boat that would come by, to what I call the bait butler.
Bait butler. Yeah, awesome. He got to wear a tuxedo awesome. Now. He
can wear a bait butler. Right. Yep. Dinner is served. So yeah, live bait. I was going to say yes or no, but obviously there's time and place and conditions in offshore that, yeah, you would like to have live bait.
I think they're not going to, if I had it my way, I would use jigs over bait in any opportunity that I could.
I love jig bites.
Dude, I'm a jig fanatic. Oh my gosh. It's disgusting. And I don't know. I've kind of explained to my wife, but I don't know that she fully comprehends how much money I have invested in slow pitch jigging and vertical jigging tackle, but it's an unhealthy amount. And I do think it makes a big difference when you hone that craft. I kind of fell into we kind of talked about lures, live bait. I like live bait fishing when you need to for a tournament and you're offshore. If I'm in Brevard County and it's 25 to 45 feet of water within a mile or two out, yeah, I'm going to be using bait because it's pretty shallow. But when you go down to Southeast Florida, and Southeast Florida is not like anywhere else in Florida, the Panhandle's got some deeper areas, but you still got to go a little ways. In 2 miles down there, you're deeper than 300 feet of water.
Yeah.
So it drops off fast, and that's what makes it so awesome and so accessible to those guys down there. You can go out there with a live bait rod and a jigging rod, and that's all you really need. It can be you can be super productive keeping it very simple, just like us inshore guys do. Go out with a paddle tail and a topwater, or like just two rods, and make it happen. You can do that, one live bait rod and one jigging rod, whether you spin jigging or you do the slow pitch thing unconventional that I've really like lasered in on the past couple years. But if I had it my way, I would slow pitch jig for blackfin tuna every day.
So give some insight on that, because I know there might be some listeners here, as we don't get to target blackfin tuna from the guy.
That is a very deep rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I would do this without having my fan hit it, but custom crazy setups, slow pitch jigging setup, Tenryu Horizon SL, like Japanese rod. They're not available in the US. Custom accurate Valiant narrow with the big slow pitch jigging handle. 20-pound braid. You don't need thick braid, because when you're slow pitch jigging, the rod's not fighting the fish, the reel's fighting the fish. It's why you have a conventional, all that winching power, like 3 feet per turn of the handle.
Yeah.
And the whole point is, I think people out there that fly fish, okay, or people out there that whatever type of fishing you do, if you become an expert, Joe likes to say, simplicity specialist on the previous podcast, if you become a specialist in something, and you find your way into fly fishing or slow pitch jigging tackle, I think you appreciate it not just because of the unique technique that you have to hone, all the moving parts and pieces, the line, the leader, the rod, the reel, the jigs, the action of the jig. It's really technical, but there's an art to it. And I think that's why I appreciate it the most, is because with high speed vertical jigging, you get a rod that's got good recoil, a spinning reel that's got a good retrieve, 30-pound braid, 6,000 size reel, and you just jig, high speed. Yeah. And you just go. Great for tuna, great for kings, great for amberjack. But slow pitch jigging was designed for demersal species, like bottom fish, like muttons, gags. Yeah. It was designed overseas in pressured fisheries for their bottom fish that, you know, they wanted to get down to depths with different current, and they wanted to catch fish that were getting really, really difficult to catch. And a guy developed this technique of fluttering different shaped jigs. This is like a little JYG jig. It's kind of got a bevel down the center. It's like a flat diamond. And you're not really high speeding this. You're kind of like you're pitching it. And what that rod does is if you took a regular jig spinning rod and you tried to like work the jig or give it a flick or, you know, like a slow jerk or whatever, it's not going to move in the same manner because these traditional jigging rods that we're familiar with in the U.S., they're thick blanks. They're really responsive. They'll get a fast jerk, but these slower action rods that are made out of a different type of carbon material, when you go to pitch, that rod recoils and loads in such a way where the jig's not doing this. The jig is pitching up and then sideways and fluttering and then pitching up and then sideways and fluttering. You're staying in the strike zone longer and you can't really get the right action, at least how the jigs were intended to be fished, with a rod that's not designed for the technique. So there's a lot of benefits.
So it's a specialized.
Incredibly specialized
equipment, yes.
And I kind of fell into it, I think, because I did inshore tournaments. I did well in inshore tournaments. I love fishing for redfish. I did offshore tournaments with live bait, caught tuna, caught kingfish. I love that. I never got into the fly fishing thing. That's not for me yet. I think in my later years, maybe. But I fell into this because I like the technical aspect. I like the challenge. And I like the fact that there is an art to it. This is like a 30-pound jig bag.
Yeah, okay? I can see.
It's gross.
You can't see that. That's a loaded bag of
Lots of like five, six, seven, eight. I have some jigs that are a pound, and I anticipate fishing 700 to 900 feet of water for golden tilefish. Like, not out of a kayak. If I could do that, I would, but that's a little bit of a hike. But I love this. As much as I love inshore sight fishing for tail and redfish on a super calm day, that has its place. But for about 3 to 4 months out of the year, I love tuna. That's my jam. Yeah. My jam and my jelly, and I'll do it as much as I can.
They sure taste good too. You can do so much with them. I'll go bubble gum shrimp on the tuna if you want me to.
Yeah. you say when and where, man.
Oh man, yeah.
So, yeah, I where do we go from here, man? You got the itinerary. It's a lot. I
know you can go way off in the rabbit hole on those, is what you're saying. So those, you know, speed jigging, you know, like you said, that when and where you can just go grab a, you know, one of the lower end pin phantom jigging rods off of the rack with a little squall 6,000.
Oh, yeah. Like an ugly stick Tiger Light 6'6" medium.
Yeah, with a little 6'6".
With a Daiwa BG 4500 or a Penn Battle 5,000 or 6,000, 30-pound braid, and a couple of like knife jigs, like speed jigs. This wouldn't be one, but it's pretty close. And just like work it back as fast as you can. Yep. Any of the oil rigs. I think y'all got oil rigs out near you.
Yeah, we got some short rigs nearby.
You know, just pick the gram size appropriate to the depth you're fishing. I mean, you got some that are shallow as like 50, 60 feet, right? So in those depths, you only really need like the general rule of thumb, current changes the weight of the jig, but about 1 gram per foot. And then when you get past like 120, 150 feet, you got different swing currents and you probably need to go a little bit heavier. So 150 feet, 150 gram jig. You can still hit bottom in 200 feet with 150 gram jig. This is, I think, like a 140. So this is perfect for anything 80 feet to 250, 300 if there's no current.
Right.
But yeah, when you get a good fish on a high speed jig and you're working as fast as you can and something hits it and freight trains you.
Oh, it's awesome.
When it happens, you're going to be like, man, I don't want to catch redfish anymore.
That can happen. That can happen.
Yeah.
That can happen. I know I shared some stuff with Sean the other day. He said, man, I might have to just try that out over here. I was like, roles when I had Sean on the podcast. You know, I do really well with the heavier rattle traps for kingfish over here.
Really?
Yes.
Like the one out, like the Magnum 1 ounce?
Yes.
Dude. Okay.
Yes. And you can jig them up too off of the reef.
Dude. So just the chrome and blue?
Chrome and blue, chrome and pink. And then the chrome and blue, actually, I paint black lines on them.
To look like a...
Like a little Spanish and stuff, a little small.
Yeah, fish, yeah, yeah.
You know? Because I fish with some, it's like the cheapest Bagleys or whatever. They're the Wind Tamer, like the cheapest freaking diving bait you can buy. Like,
dude, the bomber
Wind Tamer. Wind Cheater.
Yeah.
Yeah, like $8.99 or something. And they have that one in there. It's called mackerel is what the color is, but it's chrome blue with a green back. It's got black lines on it. And we absolutely smoke them on that over here. So I started painting my rattle trap, like the 1 ounce and 1 ounce and a half, and upgrade the hooks on them. And I've caught some pretty good kings on those.
Dude, I've
never caught some Kobe on them too.
The coolest thing about fishing, regardless whether it's inshore or offshore, is taking the techniques regionally and applying them to different regions.
Yep.
It's awesome to say, guys up in Jacksonville, man, we swear by gulp, curly tail mullet, and pearl white for flounder. Mm-hmm. You go down to like Southwest Florida and Pineland, it's all about DOA.
Yep.
Gulps works everywhere, but you take a corky, okay, from Texas waters, use them over in Jacksonville waters.
Yeah,
people don't use corkies as much. People use miradines, the hard baits, but You do different things and you end up throwing things fish had never seen before. And all of a sudden they're like, I like that.
I like that for sure. Yeah. Cause that's the thing about people listening. Just like you say, in different regions, you might pick up on something here that you haven't, nobody's really done around that area. And just like you say, it's like the fish haven't seen that before. So what's that going to tell you?
It's going to work.
Yeah. It's going to work. Yeah. And this is like over in Georgia. You know, well, they call the cobia over here, they call them ling. Everybody calls them ling. Lemon fish, cobia, you know.
Crab eaters.
You know, back in the day in Georgia, we would target them with live eels. Like, we pitch live eels to them. So that got me thinking, man, what if I just rig a big jig head, like a 1 ounce or 2 ounce jig head with like some, like a big pink or big purple, you know, old monster zoom worm, and I was catching them on bass worms.
Are you serious?
Yeah, dead serious. looks just like a eel going through the water,
dude.
And no, I hope nobody's listening. I hope nobody watches this podcast. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you right now. I've caught some giant speckled trout on bass worms.
Really?
I'm sharing that right now. And if y'all want to try it, get out there and try it in the wintertime and see what happens.
Eels, man. So eel imitations. Yeah. All I get. When I go for tarpon, I got a buddy, Sam Smith, came down from Connecticut. He works with a guy that a company called Gravity Tackle up in the Northeast. They make custom hand poured plastics.
For striper, right?
Yeah, they use them for striper.
Yep.
He's all he has is this blackish purple eel, and he uses it for everything. He got like a 20-pound dog snapper on it the other night. But I'll go out at night in January and February. And we're sticking 80 and 100-pound tarpon on those eels. And everybody's got spool techs. Everybody's got no live bait needed. All these crazy local plastics and lures and stuff. Or everyone's like, man, you got it. You got to use this and that. Guy comes down with eels from the Northeast. And that gets bit 3-1 on tarpon. And something about eels. I think, guys that know, they don't need a lot
of action. You're in the know. We got sand eels down here that frequent the reefs and shell and stuff. And then the redfish at times of the year, you'll see when you're cleaning them, they'll be full of those 6-8 inch eels.
Dude.
Same thing with the big speckled trout. They'll be full of them.
That's what I'm going to take
Pay
out.
Pay attention.
Walmart, everyone at Walmart's going to be like, where are all the Magnum worms gone off the peg?
Where did those
go? Mind your business.
Mind your business. So you fished a lot offshore, but what's your bucket list fish off of a kayak?
Ooh.
Have you caught that yet? Or do you still have a few?
I did. I didn't even tell you. I went to Panama, dude. I went to Los Buzos.
You went to Los Buzos and fished with Adam.
With Adam. and I got like a, I don't know how big, dude, big Kubera style.
Oh, big Kubera.
Big Kubera. I mean, I got roosters. Ooh. I got a broom tail. I got, you know, I don't know, a whole bunch of different, brought big bluefin trevally. And it was awesome. But man, like getting, I see if I can find the picture.
Kubera, that's the Kubera, one I want.
That's like
a 50 or 60 pounder. That'd be so sick.
It was nuts, man. I don't know. I'll have to show you later. But that was, I got it on an artificial too.
That makes it even better.
Like 35, 45 feet of water where there's like waves breaking against a shoal.
Yeah, ripping it out of the rocks.
Like it scared me. I can't believe that I didn't lose that fish. Everything in me was telling me I'm gonna lose this fish. Yeah, here we go.
There it is right there. Giant. Giant.
Dude, nothing compares to that.
That's it right there.
After doing that, I mean, if I had a bucket list, I think Christina Weber, I don't know if you remember the name. Christina Weber. Yeah. So she had an ambition of wanting to get a swordfish out of the kayak for a period of time. She would try to work with a couple people out of Stewart, Port St. Lucie area. I'd like to orchestrate that.
To mothership out and then
mothership out and do a sword. Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work, but I'd try that.
Yeah.
Or getting a golden tilefish out of the kayak would be my bucket list. But beyond that, man, some people say, oh, black marlin down in Los Buzos.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty scared.
Six, 7 hours worth of fighting. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I think I'd be like happy with a Kubera or a 16-inch plus rooster fish. Yeah, definitely. Definitely need to call in backup for a big marlin. Yeah. Ooh, no. Man, with that, you know, we're going to wrap it up for the night. Talk about a big Kubera. Man, that just makes me want to go get on the water right now.
I'm telling you. And it's affordable. When you spec it out and you look at how much not to like discredit local guides, I think guides are instrumental in terms of keeping the sport of fishing going and getting people into the sport. But when you start looking at, you know, the dollar value of what it takes to fly to Panama, stay in Panama, 5 full days of kayak fishing for exotics with nobody else around you. You're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you're out in the middle of nowhere. Great food, great company.
Yeah.
Meeting cool people from all over the world.
But all things considered, travel, lodging, tip, expenses, very, very affordable compared to anywhere else. You could plan a 1 week, you know, trip to with your wife or your boo thing and go to Europe, and you'll probably end up saving money doing the Panama trip.
For sure.
So I tip my hat to you, Adam. You're one of the most wild guys I fish with. And
that's got a good gig going. And then Robert Fields comes down. And gets the ball rolling.
Robert, like we were two ships passing night. He got out there one day.
Oh man,
it was a bad day. Like he's like, oh, Justin took up. I'm like, it's a shark, and it like I like bird's nest my conventional setup. And he's trying to get it on video. He puts his camera down. He's like, come on now, man. But that's not camera material.
It's not camera material. Yeah, he's done well. Old Texas boy too, done well with the traveling around YouTube vlogging and stuff. You know. Got a good little gig going. Rob, you're listening. I'm waiting for you to come on here too. Get you on Chasing the Tide. It's about time you come on the show. We'll get you on here too. So,
I just want to arm wrestle you. That's it.
There you go. So, we're going to wrap up, man. I really appreciate you coming on tonight and, you know, sharing some of the tidbits and stuff about, you know, info about Salt Strong and then about talking about your winnings recently with Extreme Kite Fishing Tournament over there in Pompano. Pretty cool event. Y'all look that up online and check out the details for next year's events coming up. I'd like to see some of us Texas guys go over there. I know there has been in the past, but let's try to make some more trips over that way. And with that, you know, if you got any shout outs or support you'd like to give thanks to, it's all yours, man.
I'm happy to be here, Dustin. I'm flattered you have me on, and you know, hope I can meet a lot more people over in Louisiana and Texas when I come over to that tournament, Fallen Tide.
And we'll come on. I'll be ready.
We're gonna
go find it. You need to come on.
You might hand my butt to me, but it'll be worth it. You know, pay my dues.
Well, cool.
Well, thank you, man. Dustin. This was an awesome podcast. I'm really happy you had me on, man.
Sure thing, man. Good times. Well,
can't do this without the listeners. So, hey, I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank everybody for supporting the podcast. Appreciate Waterloo Rods and Troubadour & Co. for support of Chasing the Tide also. And y'all check us out on the Waypoint.tv app and all your favorite podcast platforms. Check us out on there and follow us on YouTube to see the video portions of this. And that's about it. We'll wrap it up and we'll catch y'all next time on Chasing the Tide.